The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast. Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts, Amelia.
And Beth.
This week's episode, we are all about nightclubs and haunted music venues. Should we just dive right in this week?
I think that we should.
All right. My first story, I am super duper excited to share. I have wanted to share this story since we started this show. This is one of my absolute favorite hauntings, and it finally fit in. So let's get started. Bobby Mackey's Music World is a nightclub and honky-tonk located on the banks of the Licking River in Wilder, Kentucky. It's owned by country music singer Bobby Mackey. The old building was a slaughterhouse for over 40 years in the 1800s. It is said that due to its location on the banks of the Licking River, one of only two rivers in the world that flows north, and the fact that fresh blood was readily available at the slaughterhouse, it attracted hordes of satanic worshippers who used the site as sacrificial grounds. In 1896, the building became entangled in the sensational murder of Pearl Bryan, a 22-year-old woman who was 5 months pregnant at the time of her murder. Pearl's headless body was found 2.5 miles away from the slaughterhouse. Her head was never found, but speculation abound that it was likely disposed of in the slaughterhouse's basement well. The well was used to drain blood into the river, and two men who were active in the occult confessed to the murder. Scott Jackson, a dental student at Ohio College of Dental Surgery, was the first to be arrested, and later he implicated fellow student and roommate Alonzo M. Walling. During the trial, it was revealed that Jackson had a secret romance with Bryan for several months prior to her murder. Allegedly, on January 31, 1896, Jackson and Walling slipped cocaine into Bryan's drink while they were in the saloon in Cincinnati and proceeded to murder her later that night. Alonzo Walling and Scott Jackson became the last two people hanged in Campbell County when they were sent to the gallows on March 21, 1897. For the murder of Pearl. Alonzo Walling used his last words to vow to return to torment his executioners from beyond the grave. The gallows were located right by the slaughterhouse. So I have a few comments to make. So we have this poor young woman. She's 22. She's 5 months pregnant. She's having this affair. Who the heck knows if this guy was the father? It doesn't say, but maybe. Why are these two dental students in the 1800s in Kentucky occult Satan worshipers?
Makes for a better story.
Well, it's unusual that people at that time in that part of the country would be into this at that level, especially people who were in dental surgery school.
Why? Why do you think that it would be weird to have alternative beliefs, if you will, even in the 1800s in Kentucky?
Well, there were very few people living there. I don't know how they would even gotten that information. Kentucky, you know, white Kentucky, I guess we could say, is, you know, very Christian religious. They didn't have a lot of ways to transfer information in and out of Kentucky at that point. Very low population levels. And so you have these two men and then they're at dentistry school. So obviously they're looking into other things. They're obviously well-educated in in medical fields, things like that. To even go to college at that time was somewhat, you know, unusual for sure.
Right. So they would have had exposures to a lot of different things throughout their earlier schooling anyway. And if they're coming from affluent families, then it actually makes sense that they would have at least had exposure to different religious ideas.
It just seemed very odd to me because, you know, we've discussed before that there was a big satanic influence in Rhode Island right around this period, you know, in Providence, and they built hotels and things like that. But just that part of the country specifically, when you think about what the population probably looked like at that time, I can't imagine it was very large. And this sounds like, you know, it's along this very strange river, and, you know, people who are interested in the occult like to hang out there. And I don't know, it just seems odd to me. So that's number one. There goes my pen. Number two.
Amelia's so upset, she's throwing stuff.
Throwing pens around the room. Number two, if you're going to kill someone and you want to drug them before you kill them, before you want to take their head off, why is cocaine your drug of choice?
Because you wanted them to go out happy anyway. We officially on Ghost Hunting in New England do not condone you killing anyone. Please don't kill anyone. Please don't.
And especially don't give them cocaine before you kill them.
Yeah, that stuff's expensive.
Well, it's expensive, but they're going to be all like awake, quite awake, if you will. They're probably going to have extra strength.
They're just going to talk a lot. A lot.
Maybe that, but you know, I imagine that, I don't know like the chemistry of it, but their blood's probably moving around pretty fast. And you know, I just, that wouldn't be my go-to drug if I was going to do something to somebody.
No, but it's probably all they had access to.
They're dental students.
So?
Formaldehyde. No, what's it called? Chloroform. Formaldehyde. I'm so funny.
Formaldehyde's what we put in the dead bodies.
I know, I'm so silly.
No, that I don't know that like students have all the access to the medications.
Yeah, they do.
Are you sure?
They do now. I know that. Yeah, I know people in dental school.
All right.
Okay. So according to the Kentucky Post articles at that time, Walling and Jackson were offered life in prison instead of the death penalty if they told authorities where Brian's head was located. People familiar with the two murders claimed they refused because they were terrified they would spark the wrath of Satan if they exposed the site of his sacrificial grounds. Reportedly, they offered Brian's head as a sacrifice to Satan, most likely in the slaughterhouse well. Local believers claim that the well is a gateway to hell of sorts, a gruesome legend that lives on to present day.
Wow.
Yeah. So, Brian.
I think I want to know more about the well gateway to hell.
Yeah. So, we're going to go over all that.
Okay, cool.
So, because remember, it was the well was where they had the blood come from the animals into the river. Mm-hmm. So, that's why. Okay. So, Pearl Bryan is often seen now post-mortem, headless, walking around the grounds. Some places I've read, she kind of appears sometimes as a woman in white on kind of the outside areas, but a lot of times she's still headless. And then Walling and Jackson are reportedly have been seen on numerous occasions at Bobby Mackey's over the years, along with other spirits whose lives were entangled with the building in some way. So there are rumors that several people have died unnatural deaths inside the building, which is alleged to be the site of several murders when it was a casino. Back when it was a casino, after it was a slaughterhouse. So it was a slaughterhouse, then it was a casino. Then we move on to the 1950s. It became the Latin Quarter.
There's got to be a joke in there about slaughterhouse to a casino. Let me see if I can work on that.
So then it became the Latin Quarter, another popular nightclub whose owners were arrested several times for gambling charges. Later, the building became yet another rough and tumble nightclub, the Hard Rock Cafe, no relation to the chain. And it was closed in 1978 by police request after several fatal shootings on the premise. Bobby Mackey purchased the building in 1978, and that's when he opened his Music World right after. So one of the most frequent spirits ever seen is this young woman. Her name's Joanna. Joanna was a cabaret dancer during the times of the club's casino days, and she was madly in love with the club singer, and his name was Robert Randall.
Hey, we had one of those.
Hey, we did. Joanna became pregnant, and when her mobster father found out about the pregnancy, he decided to hang Robert inside the club. Joanna found out and decided to drink a vial of poison, which killed herself and her unborn child in the club. So it was a bad night. Some reports say that she also killed her father that night with poison. And then some reports say that this whole story never happened.
urban legend.
Some people say it is. And so some other spirits, Joanna sometimes shows up with Albert Red Masterson, who I think is her father. So that's kind of wild. So one thing to note is that sometimes you'll read this and it'll be like, it's all made up. It's just folklore. It's not true. But keep in mind, Bobby Mackey didn't want people to know his club was haunted. He didn't believe it was haunted. He didn't like the rumors going around that his club was haunted. And I imagine in a Kentucky country music circuit, saying that your club is on a former satanic slaughterhouse grounds probably isn't great for business. According to sworn affidavits, witnesses, legends, paranormal activity, all this stuff, a lot of people are reporting that they smell the strong smell of rose perfume after something spooky happens. Now, to me, this was interesting because a lot of times when you look at exorcisms, the smell of roses fills the room after you exorcise a place and you clear a home. But this doesn't seem like that's what it is. This seems like someone probably passed away who had that type of perfume. So there's a jukebox in the club, and that sometimes comes on and plays these old tunes from the 1930s and 40s. And a lot of times it's songs that aren't in the jukebox. It turns on and it plays these songs that aren't there at all. And so it includes a song called The Anniversary Waltz, and it's been heard numerous times by numerous people throughout the years. Chairs are often moved inexplicitly, and they're often found stacked up. Rooms go really cold, and people have heard their names being called only to turn around and no one's there. Several people also claim to have become possessed by spirits while at the club. Some of the sworn affidavits claim they felt cold chills run through their bodies, while others claim to have taken on different personalities and even different facial features while they're inside.
Like somebody grew a beard, or like all of a sudden had like one eye, or what changed about their facial features?
I don't know. Maybe they all of a sudden started walking around like with their face all squinty, and usually it's not squinty.
Okay. That just seems odd. So maybe there's just like a weird gas in the air that some people get all woozy with.
Maybe. There's this guy, he's an author, his name's Douglas Hensley, and he wrote a popular book on the subject, and it's called Hell's Gate, Terror at Bobby Mackey's Music World. So Hensley spent 5 years researching the bizarre background of the nightclub and the building, which was a sordid history that dates back to the 1800s. In the back of the book are copies of 29 sworn and signed affidavits from club employees, patrons, Wilder policemen, and others, including Bobby Mackey's wife, Janet Mackey, who writes in her affidavit that unseen forces threw her down a flight of stairs and tried to harm her in other ways. The nightclub was subject of an episode of the TV show, A Haunting, that I really liked a lot in college. And I have the season it was on DVD somewhere in my apartment. It's like my absolute favorite show. It's totally scary. One of the most notable cases of possession at Bobby Mackey's is this guy, Carl Lawson, who lived upstairs above the nightclub as a caretaker for the club. Lawson's one of the main subjects of Hensley's book and claims to have been attacked by several of the resident spirits and actually possessed by some of them as well, including Alonzo Walling. A supposedly successful exorcism of Lawson and the entire building took place at Bobby Mackey's on August 8, 1991. It was performed by Reverend Glenn Coe and witnessed by Hensley, who recorded the whole thing on video. So for a time, it appeared that the exorcism was successful, but in more recent years, strange occurrences had begun once again. Bobby Mackey, who always refused to believe in the paranormal activity from the beginning, made plans to tear down the building and construct a new club on an adjacent property after he viewed the videotape of Carl Lawson's exorcism. I guess I just freaked him out. A piece of ceiling fell on Bobby Mackey one day while he was discussing the demolition. And then the adjacent property he purchased ended up getting a fissure on it, 6 inches wide and 50 feet deep.
What?
Yeah. It runs from the old slaughterhouse well to the middle of the adjacent property.
Wow.
So needless to say, he never rebuilt the club. Just got rid of it, and he owns another club
that's not located on a haunted slaughterhouse. Mm-hmm.
No, but he has a song called The Ballad of Joanna after the cabaret dancer. And that's that. In the show, if you watch the show, it's crazy. It's one of my absolute favorites. It scares the bejesus out of me. But they have this one point where like the ghost possesses this woman and like puts her head on the sink when she's like washing and she's in the kitchen of the club. And the sink turns on and blood comes out of it.
Ew.
And then, like, someone walks in, and all of a sudden, like, everything goes back to normal.
She just looks like a crazy person with her head in the sink.
Screaming. Screaming. Obviously. I mean, wouldn't you? Oh, my God.
Yeah. I think that I would.
So that is the story of the very haunted, very spooky Bobby Mackey's Music World in Wilder, Kentucky.
Hmm. Very interesting.
Have you ever been to Kentucky?
No, I have not been to Kentucky.
I haven't either.
Do you want to hear my story?
I do.
When we were brainstorming ideas for the season, she was like, oh, I want to do haunted music venues. And she'll tell us why later. And I'm like, okay, no problem. And so let's see, we usually record at like 8:30 on Thursday nights. And so she sent me a text message about 7 o'clock telling me the two stories that she had. And my stomach like fell out the bottom of my body because I'm like, oh my God, it's Thursday. And I have not done any research on anything yet. So I'm, you know, quickly trying to look into different, you know, haunted music venues around, you know, us here in New England. And one of the ones that I myself really enjoy going to is the Orpheum in Boston. And I've seen a number of different shows there. Sean really likes to go there. So he takes me with him. But so I was trying to find out if the Orpheum here in Boston was haunted. And instead, I found that there's actually haunted Orpheums in lots of different places across the United States. Not here in Boston, but Phoenix has a haunted Orpheum. And Memphis, Tennessee has a haunted Orpheum theater. So that's what I'm going to talk about.
Ooh.
You look very intent watching me.
Are you going to do it on both of them?
No, I'm just going to do Memphis.
Okay.
Another time I can do Phoenix. But like I said, I had to, I was also cooking dinner when I got the message from Amelia that like, hey, by the way, we're recording in an hour. So yeah, so this is, I took all my notes and you are going to listen to how it is I put together a story in my head because I did not actually write a script this week. So as always, I like to tell you the history of wherever I'm talking about. So the Orpheum Theater is a classic Southern theater. It was built in 1928. It's right on Beale Street in Memphis, which is the big place that, you know, has all the bars and, you know, everybody goes to party for New Year's. And it replaced the Grand Opera House, which burned to the ground in a fire in 1923. So it was officially opened in 1928, right before the start of the Great Depression. So they built this big, beautiful 2,000-person hall. It has chandeliers hanging from the ceiling that weigh about 2,000 pounds each. It's covered with all sorts of gold leaf. It has 5 floors with a balcony that you can sit on up at the top. It's absolutely breathtakingly gorgeous. But naturally, when the Great Depression hit, people weren't interested in going to see shows in theaters. They didn't have any money to do stuff like that. So the theater kind of went through a few different ideas of how they were going to make money. They played vaudeville shows. I have to admit, I'm not entirely sure what a vaudeville show is. Do you know what a vaudeville show is?
Isn't it like a classic kind of old Western theater type thing?
It could be. They have a gigantic organ in the theater. Go ahead.
A type of entertainment popular chiefly in the U.S. in the early 20th century, featuring a mix of specialty acts such as burlesque, comedy, and song and dance.
Oh.
Or a stage play. This is what I thought it was. A stage play on a trivial theme with songs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
So they probably got some people who had a little bit of money anyway to come in and watch their shows. And they had this enormous organ. It had some German name that I'm not even going to try to pronounce. And one of the articles that I read talked a lot about this organ, which I thought was kind of interesting. But so they had that going on. And so as vaudeville shows kind of went out of fashion and people started watching the silent movies, they would play the organ while the silent movies were showing. They actually had an early form of trivia. People could go and they would get asked questions and they would win, you know, a little sum of money at the end of the night. And so I thought that was really interesting because I'm very, I would not say that I am active in any sort of trivia circle, but I do find them to be an intriguing concept. Well, so naturally after the silent pictures, then we had the talking pictures. So those came in after that. In 1976, the Orpheum was sold. A nonprofit bought it and reopened it in 1984. And there were major renovations done to it in both 1996 and 2015. So that's just the building itself. There are reportedly 7 potential spirits that haunt the place.
Ooh, spooky.
Yeah. So some of the things that you see happen or have been witnessed happening there are that doors fly open and close without anyone being near them. No wind, no nothing. They just bang, open. It's almost like somebody comes through the door and then bang, closes behind. Right. The organ that I talked about a moment ago, there was a repairman there fixing the organ one evening, and he was getting a little bit frustrated that he was not able to repair the organ quickly. And so he kind of got to that point, you know, where you're working on something. You're like, I just have to walk away for a minute. Right. So he packs all his stuff up, locks the door, goes across the street, gets a cup of coffee, psychs himself back up and, you know, is now calm enough that he can go and keep working on the organ. He gets back there only to discover that the organ has been fixed in his absence.
Ooh.
Whatever was wrong with it, somebody came along and fixed it for him. But there was no one else in the building and he had locked up. So there was no way that anybody else could even get in there.
That's a good ghost because organ repairs are expensive.
Yeah. So this one, this one just baffles me. So a homeless man was accidentally locked on the 5th floor balcony by the night watchman one night. And the night watchman, as he is finishing up his rounds, hears this blood-curdling scream and then running feet coming down 5 flights of stairs in the pitch darkness. And then all of a sudden, this homeless man bursts out of the gallery. He comes through the door so fast, he knocks the door off its hinges, doesn't stop at all, goes right out the front door, is still screaming, and never looks back. So nobody has actually like talked to that guy about what did you see, but clearly he saw something very upsetting. Not long after that, there was an alarm call that went out and the police showed up and they brought in their canine units. The dogs absolutely refused to enter the theater, just laid down right at the door and nope, not for love or money. They would not get up and go into that theater. They certainly sensed something there that the their human partners could not. There's a woman, they believe, her name is Eleanor. And she's, you know, your classic woman in white sort of thing, something they're not exactly sure what happened to her, where she came from. But she's seen from time to time moaning sadly up on the balcony. She just sits there. If you've read Harry Potter, you know, she's like the moaning Myrtle of the balcony instead of the bathroom. Have you read Harry Potter?
No.
Have you seen the Harry Potter movies?
I saw one. Ironically, with our pastor.
The books are much, much better than the movies. Just going to say.
Hmm.
Okay. So the big ghost there is this girl, Mary. Right. And by big, I mean, she's the most commonly seen one. And she's the one that people really know the most about.
That's what I was going to ask. I'm like, or is she just like a giant opera singer?
She's actually a 12-year-old girl.
Whoa.
And so there are 3 different accounts of what happened to her. She has no last name, by the way, so it's pretty hard to track down what exactly her origin story is. But one version of the story is she was killed in a car accident in front of the Grand Old Opera, the Grand Opera House. And she just kind of liked hanging out there and stayed around. Another story is that when the Grand Opera House burned down in 1923, she was in the opera house and died in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a third story that she died by falling from the balcony to her death. And I actually
that's awful.
I actually think that one might be the most true because of where she's always seen and what she does. So she has a favorite seat. It's so cute. She likes to sit in C5 on the balcony. She's been seen sitting there by all sorts of different people, including the cast of The King and I and The Fiddler on the Roof, that they looked up and saw this girl sitting in a white 1920s style dress in that seat, C5, and just smiling and nodding along and just kind of dancing in her seat to the songs that were going on.
Are you talking about the Grand Old Opry? Or are you talking about the Orpheum Theater?
I am talking about the Orpheum Theater. Uh-huh. But before the Orpheum Theater was there, it was the Grand Opera House.
Oh, okay.
The Grand Old Opry is in Nashville, which is on the other side of Tennessee.
Right. That's where I got confused. Okay, sorry.
Sorry. It's a good clarification, though. All right. So other people have also seen our little Mary. There was a woman and her group of friends. They were walking through the lobby, and they reported seeing her just dancing, twirling, you know, like you would imagine a 12-year-old girl would do in a big fancy lobby. And she's just dancing, and then right before their eyes, she just faded out and disappeared. Gone. There was a housekeeper and workman who she was continually playing little childish pranks on. They never saw her, but they felt her. And I certainly, you know, personally, I can understand what that's like. But they said that when she was around, they felt like they were climbing into a cold bathtub. And Mary kept taking this particular workman's tools, and she would hide them on him. And one of her favorite places to hide them was in the toilet. Which I think is just such a weird, weird thing to do, to annoy a workman that way. So Veronica Batterson, it's so unusual for us to get like full names of the people who are witnesses to some of these things. So whenever I find a full name, I always like to give the full name. Like there are actual real people who these have been attributed to. So Veronica Batterson, she and her husband were at a Jerry Seinfeld show. Actually, at the Orpheum Theater. And Veronica was sitting in C5, Mary's favorite seat. And throughout the course of the show, she just kept feeling like there was somebody standing right behind her. And she kept looking around. There was nobody there, nobody there. And every now and again, she would get like tapped on the shoulder by an invisible somebody. And so it was thought to be Mary, like, hey, Veronica, get out of my seat. That's my seat. So other people have also reported that same sort of feeling as they were sitting there, that, you know, something doesn't like people sitting in that seat. So I don't know, maybe that homeless guy that ran out screaming, maybe he just happened to sit in that seat and Mary came over and was like, dude, all these seats, you got to sit in my seat. Anyway, so that was kind of scary. The Memphis Paranormal Investigations Group has done several investigations at the Orpheum Theater. And while they say that Mary is actually, there's no proof of Mary whatsoever. And they think that she is just a made up urban legend in order to sell t-shirts. They say that there are several other ghosts who are there, but they don't buy into Mary. They did claim to have an orb photo that was taken on the website that I was looking at. And there was supposed to be a link to it on what I assume was the Memphis Paranormal's website, but that website is gone. It's for sale. So if anybody wants to buy memphisghosts.com, go for it. All right. So then the last one that I want to talk about is in one of the shows, there's a performer who comes out and purposely sings Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star off key as it's part of the show. And so as they were singing this song out of nowhere from backstage, I guess, but without any warning, a child's voice joins in and sings Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, like perfectly on key. And it kind of like freaked everybody in the cast out. So the next night they do it again, right? And they gathered the entire cast together off stage while this guy is singing his off key. And it happened again. So they knew it wasn't a cast member. They had no idea where this voice was coming from.
That is very spooky.
Yeah. But, and I mean, the thing is, like a 12-year-old girl would know the Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star song.
Yeah.
So it's not out of the realm of possibility for that happening. So anyway, if you're interested in maybe sitting in seat C5 at the Orpheum Theater in Memphis, Tennessee, you may be visited by Mary.
Spooky.
the whole idea that there are all of these haunted Orpheums all over the United States, I was like, that's so strange.
Yeah, so that is.
All right. Amelia, do you have one more story that you would like to share with us tonight?
I do. So I am going to talk about now a very famous story, especially if you are in New England, and super especially if you're in Massachusetts. I'm sure you have already heard of this. And so tonight I am discussing the Coconut Grove fire in Boston, Massachusetts, and the hauntings that came out of that.
Ooh.
So the Coconut Grove fire in Boston, Massachusetts on November 28, 1942 was the deadliest nightclub fire in history and the second deadliest single building fire in American history. It claimed 492 lives. The Grove had become one of Boston's most popular night spots, featuring a restaurant and dancing on the main area, floor shows, and piano-playing entertainers in the Melody Lounge. The restaurant was visited on occasion by movie stars and music stars who would have their entry announced by the maitre d'. Across from the main dining area was the Caricature Bar, which featured renditions of the establishment's more prominent guests. The club had recently been expanded eastward towards New Broadway Lounge, which opened onto the adjacent Broadway between Piedmont Street on the south side and Schwelmut Street on the north side. It was owned by Barnley Walensky, who is a local mobster with close ties to Mayor Morris J. Tobin. The fire
mobsters
happened.
Mobsters in Boston? No.
Mobsters in Boston who know the mayor?
Oh, definitely not.
The fire happened on the first Thanksgiving weekend of World War II. The club was filled more than twice its legal capacity. The fire started when a young couple removed a light bulb for quote unquote privacy. A busboy was told to go replace it. So in order to see where he needed to put this new light bulb, the busboy lit a match. By the time he extinguished his match, the draperies ignited and flames and smoke spread rapidly through all the areas of the club. Blame, however, was directed at Walensky for violation of fire standards, and he ended up serving nearly 4 years in jail for this. So many patrons attempted to exit through the main entrance the same way they entered. The building's main entrance, however, was a single revolving door, which was rendered useless as the crowd stampeded in panic. Bodies piled up behind both sides of the revolving door, jamming it until it broke. The oxygen-hungry fire leaped through the breach, incinerating whoever was left alive in the pile. Firemen had to douse the flames to approach the door. Later, the fire laws had tightened. It would become illegal to have only one revolving door as the main entrance without being flanked by outward opening doors with a panic bar openers attached, or to have a revolving door set up so that the doors could fold against themselves in an emergency situation. So other avenues of escape were similarly useless. Side doors had been bolted shut to prevent people from leaving without paying. A glass plate window, which could have been smashed for escape, was boarded up and unusable as an emergency exit. Other unlocked doors, like the one to Broadway Lounge, opened inwards, rendering them useless against the crush of people trying to escape. Fire officials would later testify that had the doors swung outward, at least 300 lives could have been spared. So from nearby bars, soldiers and sailors raced to go assist because remember, this was World War II, but it was Thanksgiving weekend. So all these men were back in town. On the street, firefighters lugged out bodies and were treated for burned hands. As the night deepened and the temperature dropped, and this is like one of the sadder parts for me, water on the cobblestone pavement froze and then the hoses froze. Newspaper trucks were appropriated as ambulances. Smoldering bodies, both living and dead, were housed with ice water. Some victims had breathed fumes so hot that when they inhaled the cold air, they dropped like stones to the ground and died. Later, during the cleanup of the building, firefighters found several dead guests just sitting at the seats with drinks in their hand.
Oh.
The fire spread so fast they couldn't get up at all. It just like, bam, inferno hit them. So here's an interesting story. Coast Guardman Clifford Johnson, and he went back inside the building no fewer than four times in search of his date, who unbeknownst to him at the time had already escaped. So this is like a great guy. He was dating this girl and he wasn't going to leave without her, even though thank goodness she got out. So Johnson suffered extreme third degree burns on over 55% of his body. And this is in the 1940s. Thank God he survived. At that time, he was the most severely burned person to ever survive. And after 21 months in a hospital and several hundred operations, he married his nurse, which is really nice. Oh. And they returned home to his home state of Missouri. And then 14 years later, he died in a fire. His car crashed and caught on flames and he died in that.
That's horrible.
I know.
Is he a ghost now?
No. But I thought that was like one of those interesting. What are the movies that I like? About you die and then you die and the airplane, but then they see the vision of the airplane, so they don't get on the airplane, but then they all die. Final Destination. It's like the Final Destination movies. You never saw those?
No.
Classics. They're great. Great movies. I'll never in my life, as will no one else who's seen those movies, drive behind a truck carrying the tree limbs. Very scary.
Yeah, no, never.
So back to my
Also, friend. Wait a sec. Before you move on, him marrying his nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Don't we have a cousin marrying his nurse this weekend?
Yeah.
It's a timeless story. Men who are injured and taking care of nurses, and they fall in love with the nurse, and the nurse falls in love with them, and they end up married. I think it's a wonderful story.
It is. It's very nice. So the local hospitals were especially well prepared to treat the casualties, as they had been rehearsing emergency drills in response to possible attacks on the East Coast. The crisis demonstrated the value of new blood banks, and it stimulated important advancements in the treatment of burn victims. So some good stuff came out of this.
Yeah, but many, 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 many bad things came out of this too.
Yes. So following the tragedy, many new fire safety laws were enacted for public establishments, including banning of flammable decorations and a provision that emergency exits must be kept open at all times, and revolving doors could not be the sole outlet. And it's also the reason why you push doors open from the inside and you pull them open from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
If you're around here, you've heard of this. And now if you – I even remember like back when I was kind of overseeing people opening cafes and stuff, people in Boston would still talk about this story. And they'd be like, mm-hmm. Well, you have to do this and this. And it's, you know, in like the thick Boston accents because of Coconut Grove. And people still talk about it today all the time. Mm-hmm. Even though I have, it's very, very well known around here. Okay.
So when you were in Paris last year, though, did you notice that in Europe, they don't do that with the doors? A lot of them still open into the shop.
I did notice that in a lot of like really old places.
Yeah.
A few of them. Yeah.
It's a little scary when you're so used to the idea that the doors are supposed to open out and you know why they're supposed to open out, that it's like, oh, if something terrible were to happen, how would I get out?
Yeah. Today, the streets that used to box the Coconut Grove nightclub have been reconfigured to allow for construction for Boston's Radisson Hotel and Theater Complex. So the club's not there anymore.
It burned down.
Right, but they didn't like replace anything about it. So the only physical reminder of what happened on that site is a small bronze plaque with the Coconut Grove's floor plan on it. The plaque was repaired as a memorial by the Bay Village Neighborhood Association and embedded in the brick sidewalk next to the parking lot in 1993. It is considered by many that these unfortunate victims are still wandering around the area, trying to find their way to safety or maybe to discover a friend. Several employees of the Boston Radisson Hotel agree with that story. On a few occasions, people have witnessed strange appearances throughout the Radisson Hotel. Disheveled and confused men and women, seemingly to appear out of nowhere, wander past and disappear just as mysteriously. There have been others exposed in the hotel bar and in the kitchen. Odd noises, flashes, and loud popping sounds without any discernible cause. The Stewart Street Playhouse, the Radisson's Theater, is another location where fire victims make their presence known. On occasion, the quiet, shadowy form of a man can be seen passing a doorway or walking down an empty hall. When approached by employees, he fades away into nothing. Other phenomena include water, unexplained flooding in different areas within the building, and a singular water faucet in the restroom on the second floor that reportedly turns itself on even when no one's in the bathroom at all. Which obviously begs the question, how do they know it's turned on?
Well, yeah, but I would think that somebody comes in and just sees it on. But it would seem that the spirits are trying to put the fire out still.
I know.
Oh.
It's awful. I know. On one occasion, employees entered the auditorium and found a seat completely soaked with no explanation. Others have described hearing their names called while working at the theater at night, but no one else is there. So another Boston location believed to be haunted by the victims of the fire, and I didn't know about this, but it's this place called Jacques Cabaret. Are you familiar?
I am not.
So this is where I went on my 21st birthday. Jacques Cabaret is right in like the downtown Boston area, theater district area, and it's this drag club. And they put on the most beautiful and theatrical drag performances. And if you are in Boston, once all this craziness ends and we can all go outside and have fun again, everyone should go. It is, I just had so much fun that night and I love it. It's a really fun place. Anyway.
Did you see a ghost that night?
No, I didn't. I couldn't see anything that night. So Jacques Cabaret is just a few blocks away from where the tragedy occurred. And it's at 79 Broad Street, and it was used as a makeshift morgue for victims of the Coconut Grove fire. So a lot of people don't like to talk about it. A lot of people know it's haunted. Like, people will be like, it's haunted, but no one really like gives a lot of stories. However, I was able to find some stories. The first is that one of the former bartenders has said that spooky stuff's always happening. And one time he was working at the bar late at night and he was cleaning up after close. He left the area for a moment, and when he returned, he claims he saw bodies lying in rows across the floor. And when he switched the light on, they were gone. Like, everything was normal. So it's like he walked in to this like scene of what it was like back in the 40s.
Stone tape theory. Stone tape theory.
Exactly. Yes. So very, very spooky. And other people, like, just like weird stuff happens there. But that was the most significant one. So that is the story. And it's trust me, if you're, I don't know, if you at home want to learn more about this, there is such a famous fire that happened. There's so much information. I gave like a very abridged version of that part, but apparently some of the people are still hanging around, as would be expected with something that horrific.
And coconut is spelled funny.
Yeah, it's coconut. Like C-O-C-O-N-A-U-N-T. Coconut.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you just Googled coconut, the regular way to spell it, you'd find it too. But
that's
don't
what
be,
I did.
Don't be surprised if you see this weird spelling of it. That was a really great and detailed story about the Coconut Grove fire and the resulting spirits. Nice job.
Thanks.
So maybe when the craziness is all over, we will invite all of the ghost hunting in New England listeners to buy some tickets to go to Jacques Cabaret, and we'll see if we see any ghosts.
Boo!
And we'll all watch a fun show.
They do. The woman there, they do a fantastic job. That was great. Good episode. I want to take a semi-sad moment, not even sad, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how to say this, and I'm going to say it without crying. But this week's episode, we are dedicating to my Uncle Peter, who is a great man. And he very unfortunately passed away in November. And he was sick for a very long time. It wasn't COVID, but he listened to every single one of our episodes and he really loved our show.
And he loved Amelia.
Yes.
And he loved his family.
He loved his family very much. And he's my dad's only younger brother. And as we've talked about before, I'm the only girl on my dad's side of the family. As the only girl in the family, I am very spoiled. And my uncle did. He loved me very much, as he loved everyone he ever met. He was a really kind man and a really nice man, and he loved our show and he loved us. And back when he was younger, he was a musical savant. And he, when he was just even a young teenager, he was playing with adult bands back in like the 60s and 70s as a guitar player. And he played a lot of places. So I wanted to do an episode of Haunted Music Halls for my Uncle Pete. So I love you, Uncle Pete. And I love you, Timmy and Danny and Aunt Deb.
That's very beautiful.
Thanks.
Did we get any mail?
We got mail while we were sitting here that I...
Really?
I don't know what it says. Yes. So as we were sitting here, we got a drive-by ghosting.
Stop it. We did?
We did.
This is so
yes.
exciting. We haven't had a drive-by ghosting yet this season.
Yes. So this is our first one. Thank you so much, Lindsay, for writing into the show. Hey, ladies, I've been getting into podcasts recently and trying to find something on my long drives. I like ghosts and paranormal, and we, my husband and I, recently bought a property in New England 2 years ago. I love your podcast. It's so entertaining, and I like the stories.
Oh, that's so nice, Lindsay.
Yay,
thank you.
Thanks, Lindsay. We bought property in Camden, New Hampshire, so I like hearing the stories about up here. We have a story of our own on our property. I don't think it's haunted. However, we do not live here full time, but there was a book written about the previous owners. The father, who was murdered in Kiev during the Cold War, the mother drank herself to death and apparently died in their full-time home down in Boston. There have been two fires here on the property, but no one has died. I learned that half of the father's ashes were scattered on the property, some under the apple tree. We had the place logged in the last year, and I don't know where the apple tree was, but apparently it was still here. The daughter who we bought the property from wrote a book called My Dead Parents.
Wow, that's an uplifting title.
That's, oh my God, that's so Russian. Okay, again, I don't think there are ghosts here. It's fun, curious story if you want to check it out. Happy I came across your podcast. I love listening to it on my drive from Maryland to New Hampshire. Well, my goodness, Lindsay, thank you so much for your kind words. And we will check out the book, My Dead Parents, because that is quite the title. You know, the father died in Kiev, Ukraine during the Cold War. And I like learning about Eastern Europe. So I'll definitely check it out. Thank you so much.
All right. We'll be expecting a full report next week.
I can't read a book in a week. Oh, my goodness.
We don't know how long this book is.
It's not getting done in the next week. I'll tell you that.
Okay.
All right. So
did we get any reviews?
We did. That's what I was getting to next. Oh, and real fast, I just wanted to say, because we have not said it once this season, shout out to Aaron Schilb. Aaron writes our intro music at the beginning of the podcast. So you can check him out online at Aaron Schilb, the Aaron Schilb, and he has his own podcast too, Nashville Tourist Stop Podcast. So there you go. We have one new 5-star review this week, and it is from May Blaze. Title, love. I live in New England and love listening to this podcast. Bam. Short and to the point, May Blaze. Thank you so much for that uplifting review.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. We love making the podcast for listeners like you. And because we like telling ghost stories.
Anything else?
No, I think that's about it.
Oh, so yesterday, this is just a little aside because like I like adding these like little things in case like something else happens. So yesterday I was very excited. And as anyone who's ever listened to this show for more than 5 minutes will know, I'm a Reiki master. And sometimes when you're a Reiki master or you're just like have a lot of energy, when you get really like angry or you get really happy or you just have like a lot of emotion, a lot of energy inside of you, you break stuff. So, you know, if I get mad in the kitchen, stuff breaks, which, you know, given what I do for work, that can be hard sometimes. But yesterday I was quite excited and I was so excited and I'm like, I'm going to cook off some of this excitement and I'm going to make cauliflower wings. And I had coconut oil and I put it in my microwave for like 5 seconds. And within under a minute, my microwave caught on fire. And like, yes, it did. My microwave caught on fire. And I am convinced it was because I was like all hyped up and just like zapped the microwave. And we had, luckily our apartment complex replaced our microwave today.
Did you accidentally put it in for 5 minutes?
No. I put it in for 15 seconds and in under 5 seconds, it caught on fire.
Weird.
And like it started like turning colors and it really freaked me out. I was like, Paul! And Paul's like, Oh, do you know how to use a microwave? Like you probably put in the wrong type of thing. And I'm like, it's Pyrex. I'm like, what do I do with my light? Oh, yeah, I put tinfoil in the microwave, Paul. God, all right. Anyway, neither here nor there.
How on earth have you lived so long without him?
I know. That's just, it's incredible. So yeah, I believe I am the reason why the microwave broke. But luckily, the apartment complex we live in gave us a new microwave. So that's really nice of them. They didn't ask too many questions. And if they did, I wasn't here for it anyway. So that is it. So thank you guys so much for listening. You can find us online at ghosthuntinginnewengland.com, on facebook.com/ghosthuntinginnewengland, Twitter, ghosthuntingne, please leave us more 5-star reviews. 5 stars. Let's go. And we need drive-by ghosting, so send us those too. If you're new to the show and you don't know what drive-by ghosting is, it's a listener ghost story, and we'd really appreciate you sending us one. And we really, honestly, please, 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 we always need 5 stars. We like extra need 5 stars this week. So please leave us some because we'd really, really, really appreciate it. So thank you guys so much. Love you, Uncle Peter. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And as always,
happy hunting.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.